Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on this sunny and pleasant Monday afternoon. It is springtime again. After a brief fall and a short winter, we are back to spring, at least for a day or two. Rain coming later in the week, but that's okay. Will Flanagan is here, the general manager of Chicago Inno, in his Monday slot. Well, welcome back to the program, Will.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
A little bit later, we're going to talk to Marco McCautry, who is the head of Chicago Uber. A lot going on there. You know, there's a push to require Uber drivers to get a $500 chauffeur license, and Uber doesn't like that a lot. The Chicagoland Chamber, I think, had a piece in the Tribune this week. They don't like it, and we'll talk to Marco about that and other issues as well. And as I said earlier, Andy Smith from the Mutual Fund Store comes by in the second half hour. Frank Sennett will be here, too, and from Cranes, and I want to talk to Frank about a story in Cranes. Pretty interesting. You know, there's this movement against Uber, if you will, and the aldermen who are pushing that, Anthony Beal and others, have been breaking in some campaign cash as that happens. So is there a connection? We'll talk to Frank about that. I want to talk to you about, you guys have a great story about Motorola, you know, a sort of a, it's a legacy company, I guess, right? You call it that?
Yeah, 100%, a Chicago tech pillar. Yeah, there is a really interesting story. We caught one of it about 3-4 weeks ago. We love writing about density. What makes Chicago unique as a tech hub? You know, everyone's trying to compare themselves to one another. What makes this metro better than the other? And it just comes down to kind of unique little quirks. Like, oh, this little region is big in Internet of Things. There's a lot of Bitcoin startups over here. So when...
Explain for me that phrase you just used, because I keep running into it and I feel a little like a blockhead. I should understand it better. Internet of Things company.
Internet of Things. Connected tech. The light switch on this wall can be controlled by my smartphone. The heater knows that, oh, it's 72 degrees. Will likes it at 74. Let's turn it up a bit. So everything in your home, in your car, is connected to the Internet so it can get smarter.
Okay, I got you. So Motorola sort of focused on that a little bit.
Well, Motorola does a lot of that. But what was interesting is that we started catching wind of a lot of new hardware startups, whether that's wearables or Internet of Things. And one of the reasons you're starting to see a lot of hardware startups in Chicago is because of Motorola. Motorola is this tech pillar. They invented the mobile phone. And because of that, you know, they attracted world famous engineers here. Chicago has some of the best engineers because of Motorola. And now in just the past 6 months, year, 18 months, a lot of these engineers have been leaving to start their own startups. They catch this startup tech bug. And what are they going to start? They're going to start hardware businesses. So you're seeing this kind of mini hardware boom in Chicago. And it's really exciting because you don't get a ton of opportunities to own a segment, to own a category. So when you can say, like, Chicago is the hub of hardware innovation, that's a big deal. And I hope this is one of those things where it doesn't become this city births a lot of hardware startups that go to Silicon Valley. You become the home of it.
Is it a little melancholy as well, or a little sad, because here you have this great innovative company in the 80s and 90s, was in the suburbs and has been purchased and resold a couple of times, and they moved downtown to get closer to the dance, right? They wanted the dates at 1871 and everyone else, so they try to get a little hipper, and it was sort of like introducing the apple to Eve.
No, the dance was too hot, and that was the problem. It was funny. Last week, Steve, we were talking about Google launched an in-house incubator to basically take its employees and say, you got an idea? Work on your idea. Stop working on what you're doing and work on this idea. And it's kind of like, well, doesn't that seem like they may be losing business? Is that a great idea?
And I think that was the question I asked you.
Exactly.
Right.
And they're doing... This is why they're doing it, so that these innovative, entrepreneurial-minded employees stay working at your company. They don't kind of look at the dates of the dance and say, ooh, I like that. I'm going to go chase that idea. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that is certainly the glass-half-empty approach, but the glass-half-full is that the ecosystem as a whole is getting bigger. So, yes, you look at Seattle, and you know, you have kind of the Amazons and Microsoft kind of remaining those strong pillars. But if you're going to kind of lose strength from the pillar, at least it's kind of supporting new young startups that could eventually maybe be the next big thing.
I feel like it's a star that has burst, right? There's still a lot of light in things, but the big star is, I love this quote from, is it Mithil Patel, mm-hmm. who was a former Motorola engineer. He says, when you're at Motorola, you don't realize how much fun there is to be had outside Motorola. And that's kind of what happened. They came down, they saw how everyone in the tech boom in Chicago, how much fun they were having.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, this old, staid sort of company was not nearly as attractive.
Well, and what was funny, everybody we talked to, what was unique about this story is everybody had amazing things to say about Motorola. This was not, we had to leave. It was, look at what's going on in this innovation economy. We want to be a part of it. You know, we've been here 10, 15, 20 years. This isn't a situation where a lot of these 1 to 2 year new employees are leaving. Right. These are kind of guys who've been around for a while. Motorola has had its ups and downs over the past couple years, and this is the right time to you know, branch out and start something new.
So give me a couple of names. What should be watching coming out of these ex-Motorola engineers?
Totally. Speaking of Internet of Things, LightPad is a really interesting company that's doing some unique things with light switches, basically making those things smarter. You know, you look around your home and it's like, do I need a smart refrigerator? Do I need a smart television?
Do I? I don't know.
Until all of a sudden your refrigerator knows that your banana is getting moldy, so it adjusts its, you know, temperature right away. So you don't know you need these things until, wow, how could I live without them? So that is a neat one. Geobit is a company making invisible wearables, and that's kind of all they're saying about it, but it sounds really exciting.
Sounds like a scam to me, Will.
Exactly. But it's cool. I mean, you don't get a ton of opportunities to have this density, so I think it's really exciting that Chicago Tech is getting this hardware boom and can really own that as we're competing against other cities. Those are the type of engineers we don't just have to retain, we can attract as well.
That's Will Flanagan. He's the general manager of Chicago Inno and comes by most Mondays. And I don't know if you fall for an invisible wearable. Maybe you wouldn't have scored very well on the Wonderlic test.
No, I bombed the Wonderlic.
Did you?
I didn't bomb it. I'm above average. So the average is 40%, and I was at 54.
So Will's got a story coming up this afternoon, right, on Wonderlic.
On the Wonderlic. Yeah, Chicago company.
Yeah, Vernon Hills.
Yep, Vernon Hills. They've been doing the cognitive test for 75 years. They are the masters of this test. And it's, even though you know it in relation to the NFL, which is why we were talking to them, the NFL draft was in town. We wanted to learn about this company behind the Wonderlic test. But, you know, they're making Wonderlic tests for, or they're using the Wonderlic for every industry.
Is it one test or do they cater the test?
No, it's one test, which is interesting. So a banker is taking the same test that right. a tight end is. And it's not about the test. It's about what score is right for the industry. So a 30 may be right for the NFL, a 45 may be right for the financial service industry, an 18 may be right for a warehouse. So where their specialty is identifying the score that's going to be perfect for you, the employer, to look for. I took it. I was stressed, Steve. I wasn't in the right
don't
mindset. I think I can do better next
time.
No,
I took it a few years ago. I did, well, you don't need to know if you were just average. I don't want to hurt your
feelings.
It's
funny. We put my score out on our newsletter, and you can tell the only people who are writing in are the ones who've scored better than me. So my hope is that there's a lot of people who aren't writing in who
hey,
didn't do
you're in well. Journalism. You don't need a really big number.
Yeah.
Will Flanagan, good to see you again.
Good seeing you.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Just about 12:43, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Frank Sennett is here from Crane Chicago Business. He has his work boots on. He was just there at the ribbon cutting with Mayor Emanuel.
No.
Did you turn over the first shovel?
I saw some pictures of him riding a bike on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah.
You think he rode a bike? So the mayor was at the site of this new Vista Tower earlier this morning to announce that construction would begin. I guess that's news. We didn't know construction was going to begin on this?
Yeah, so that it was so imminent. We knew it would happen at some point, but I guess they're ready for that first shovel. And it's going to be the 95-story Riverside Tower designed by Jeannie Gang, who also did the Aqua Tower across the river. So it's going to be they're going to be ganging up down there.
Nice. You're waiting all day for that one, weren't you?
I was just clever enough to come up with
it. So it's going to be at Wacker and the lake or Lakeshore Drive, right?
Yeah, 375 East Wacker is the address. It's going to have 200 hotel rooms, 400 condos, and the price is going to be a sky high up to $1,750 per square foot.
Wow. And so is there a need for this building, or is it kind of just a...
I mean, it's going to be one of the most expensive residential buildings in the city. So to the extent that there are people with deep pockets who, you know, want that luxury address.
Yeah, it's an interesting neighborhood. I don't know too much of the area over there. I mean, I think of the big hotels and things like that, but not so much. I guess it is residential, right? The north end of Grant Park is very residential.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, there's a lot of condo buildings over there, and there's a some park areas that are kind of tucked away.
Yeah.
If you got the coin, it's a not a bad place to live. Easy commute downtown.
Well, we'll see, because I feel like there's a lot of building announcements, and they don't often bear fruit. Sometimes they even dig the hole. And then they have to fill it up. So that's the Vista Tower.
Yeah, this one would be the third tallest in the city.
Behind Trump and Sears, right?
Yeah.
Or Willis.
Yeah.
What is it? Is it Willis these days?
Mm-hmm.
Coming up after the headlines, we're going to talk to Marco McCautry, who is the head of Uber in Chicago. And I'm just fascinated by this move toward requiring Uber drivers maybe to have a chauffeur's license. There's a push in the city council. And Cranes has a very nice story, perhaps related, about how the aldermen pushing this are benefiting from fundraising.
Yeah, shockingly, contentious public policy issues often lead to both sides of that issue donating heavily to politicians. And this is kind of, par for the course.
I suppose it just allows them to get their message out, right?
That's right. So Greg Hines with Cranes is reporting some of the donations on the taxi driver support side. The Illinois Transportation Trade Association PAC has donated at least $23,000 to a total of 18 aldermen. And also on the other side of the coin, you have the ride sharing people donating money to charities that the City Council's Latino Caucus Scholarship Gala in November. So the charities near and dear to some councilmen's hearts, and also some of the named lobbyists for these firms are donating money directly to the councilman.
So we'll see how that plays out. Now, Uber will say that they do not make sort of direct political contributions.
But there's money floating around in there, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Money makes the world go round. So we'll talk to Marco about that coming up in a minute or so. But first, I really like that shirt you're wearing. It's a nice sort of business casual shirt, right?
Yeah.
Actually, you have a jacket. Not many people wear suit jackets anymore at work.
I occasionally have one in the closet to pull out for special occasions like seeing you.
Oh, well, that's very nice. There's another article in ChicagoBusiness.com about the triumph of business casual. Almost no one wears a suit or a dress or hosiery to work anymore.
Yeah, so this happened starting in Silicon Valley, of course, famously. All the startups, everybody's coming in their sweats and everything. And so even some very traditional industry groups like accounting firms, law firms even, are going more toward a business casual look. Khakis, even jeans in some points. There's casual dress demands from employees. They do these employee surveys, and some of these firms are finding that the top of the list for employees is, could we please wear jeans to work one day?
Right, just to relax that way. I mean, the shirt looks nice. I don't know if the tank top is the right form for the pattern, but otherwise, it's great.
They go with your cutoffs, though.
All right, Frank Senna from Crane Chicago Business. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Marco McCautry is in the studio, general manager of Uber Chicago. He's been described as a whiz kid from Uber, joined here in Illinois and Indiana from Texas, I think predominantly the Austin area not too long ago. Marco, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
So you kind of look a little like a whiz kid. What's it like being a whiz kid?
Well, that's flattering. I've been here since January, moved up from our Texas business.
Yeah.
So a lot of interesting challenges to work on here in Chicago, but excited to figure them out.
Well, you can't claim that you've made it through a Chicago winter yet, because that really wasn't one.
So I'm a kid from Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, okay, you're fine. Yeah.
So I've been winter tested.
All right, let's talk some numbers then. 30,000 drivers in the Chicago area.
Yeah, we currently have 30,000 active drivers in the area.
That's pretty hard to imagine. I mean, that's a lot of people.
You think about the way the technology works. The fact is, over half, in fact, 66% of our drivers drive under 10 hours a week.
Right.
So people have the flexibility to turn on the app and drive when they want to. And what you're saying is these rides are taking place where there wasn't an option before. Currently, 42% of our trips start or end on the south and west sides of Chicago. So you have a large platform, a large network of part-time drivers who are logging on and off the platform and really providing flexible transportation solutions at all times of the day across the city.
I know David Plouffe was in town not too long ago, and that's one of the things they were stressing, right, that the minority communities are being served extraordinarily well by Uber. That's an emphasis?
Sure. I mean, our motto is to make transportation as reliable as running water everywhere for everyone.
Right.
And so what you see is a commitment to really expand those options to people who need a ride. And the beautiful thing about it is not only are we expanding these rides and this service through a touch of a button, but the same thing is on the work side.
Right.
So in these neighborhoods, in these communities that have long been traditionally underserved, who better to take advantage of the opportunity to provide the rides than those who actually live in the community? So we had an initiative launched last summer with a number of partners here in Chicago, including the Urban League, the Cook Workforce Partnership. We also had the YWCA Metropolitan Chicago involved to create 10,000 driver jobs here in Chicago.
I know that Amazon just got in trouble recently, right? There was a Bloomberg study that showed that they weren't serving a lot of minority communities, a lot of zip codes, with the same-day service. So, I mean, I think that's something that the tech industry is very leery of, or needs to be aware of.
And so our platform, again, is about flexibility, ease of use. And what you see is we have people signing up from all walks of life, all communities. So right now, 54% of our drivers are actually coming from the south and west sides. But, you know, we have, again, people from all walks of life on our platform, and it's just a great thing.
You know, I love it that it's this big national, international thing, but it's incredibly local, right? I mean, in many ways, you're calling on your neighbor to take you to the grocery store, just like you might have done 30 or 40 years ago.
And that's great. It's a great part of the platform, and a part of Uber is really celebrating our cities. Every city that we operate in, we're very much a part of that city, a part of the culture. Again, we're made up of all walks of life in terms of our driver partners, so it only makes sense.
All right, let's talk about what's going on in the Chicago City Council now, right? Because the Progressive Council, you have a little smile coming to your face, is pushing this maybe some new restrictions. One of the things they want to do is require a chauffeur's license for Uber drivers. It's, I think, costs $500, and you think that is a bad idea, will inhibit progress. Why is that?
Well, as I stated earlier, 66% of our drivers drive under 10 hours a week here. Something that you do on a part-time basis. The people who sign up to drive with Uber here in Chicago, they don't sign up to be full-time chauffeurs. So taking courses at a local community college, paying potentially $100 out of pocket to sign up and drive, that's not how our platform works, and it's going to actually hurt the drivers on a network. There's a lot of ways to help taxi without harming the drivers and the riders here in Chicago.
Is there a breakdown? I know they don't get paid by the hour, but is there a breakdown by what a typical Uber driver might make an hour on the road?
It completely depends.
Yeah.
People are doing it on a part-time basis. Some people do it to make ends meet. Some people are driving to save towards a goal, whether it's a vacation. Some people are using it to supplement income and help put a child through college. So it really depends. Interesting stat out there is that nearly half of Americans can't afford to take care of an unexpected $400 bill. And so what you see on our platform is it's a flexible opportunity for people to start making income right away.
Are you going to be able to stop this move in the city council?
We're hoping that this obviously doesn't pass. It's going to be something that obviously harms a lot of people here in Chicago. We have millions of rides happening each month, and this would harm tens of thousands of drivers.
What are you doing to try to stop it?
We're working with an active dialogue with members of city council, really making sure they understand the full implications of passing an ordinance like this.
Mayor's on your side?
Well, we hope that all the city councilmen will be on our side on this one. Again, it's really about choice, and we want to make sure that the consumers here in Chicago have a choice.
Now, in New York, there's a movement to sort of unionize Uber drivers, right? Have you read about that? I'm sure you're aware of
that. Heard of it, not fully up to speed.
More than 1,000 Uber drivers are banding together in New York to create an association that might represent a collective bargaining unit. I would imagine that would, that sort of thwarts what this is built on and could risk Uber.
I think overwhelmingly is what you see on our platform is that the vast majority of our driver partners enjoy being their own boss, enjoy turning on the app whenever they can or whenever they want to make money in their own time. And that most drivers on our platform do not want to be employees.
There just was the $100 million agreement, too, which is a fascinating thing. I mean, I've been following this for a while because it speaks not just to Uber, but to our economy and how it's working, you know. I mean, they're referring to the Uber workforce, people doing piecemeal work here and there. And so it seems to have been resolved out of Massachusetts and California. But one of the things I'm reading is that one of the things about Uber is there's not a tip involved. And that this agreement might lead to more acceptance or movement toward tips. Can you tell me about that?
There's nothing in the platform, or there's no prohibition from a rider tipping a driver if they like to. It's not embedded as part of the overall Uber experience. It's not embedded in the mobile application, but somebody can always tip their driver if they choose.
One of the things that Lyft uses in their commercials is they say, "Hey, we take tips in a way to get more drivers." Do you have a problem competing with Lyft, or are they so much smaller that you don't even worry about that too much?
We compete intensely with a number of companies in the industry, as it's a very fast growing market. But what we look to do is make sure that we just have the best service for both our drivers and our riders, and that's really how we approach things.
Can an Uber passenger request a female driver? Can a female passenger request a female driver?
That's currently not something that's in the platform.
Yeah, Well, I asked because there's this new company. In fact, we talked to them, Chariot for Women, where it would be women drivers carrying women passengers, and the idea was it was something about security concerns or things like that. What do you make of that?
Sure. If you think about our platform, we really lean into the technology from a safety standpoint, and we have a lot of technological features that work to ensure safety before, during, and after a ride. First of all, every driver on our platform goes through a comprehensive background check. But during the ride, every ride is GPS tracked. You can hit a button and share that GPS tracking with up to five loved ones or friends. And then there's also a rating system where drivers have the ability to rate riders and riders have the ability to rate their drivers. And that provides what we've seen is a platform that people feel safe on. In fact, here in Chicago, 30% of our drivers are women.
Yeah, well, you know, and I copped to the fact before we went on the air that I've not taken an Uber ride, which is, it's an embarrassing thing for me. I don't take cabs either. I just haven't had an occasion to. But the people who do absolutely love it, and it's certainly here to say it's disrupted so many industries. If you've got 30,000 drivers now, what's the future? I mean, you're going to get to a point where they're going to be just Uber drivers and no Uber riders.
Well, what we see is the sheer pace of the rider growth. We have a full team focused every day on making sure that we can continue to meet that demand. I mean, obviously, people start taking Uber to get home safely from going out, right?
Well, how do you see it in 10 years? I mean, what's it going to be like here in 10 years?
In terms of where we're at right now is that we go from that ride out for the very first time to eventually taking it to get to work, to take it to get to the grocery store, eventually replacing car ownership. That's very much the direction we'd like to go.
Marco McCautry is the general manager of Uber Chicago. Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming
in. Very nice meeting you as well. Thanks for having me.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:52. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for listening and spending part of your Monday afternoon with me. Spending part of his afternoon with us is Andy Smith, the Executive Vice President of Investments for the Mutual Fund Store. Andy, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Steve, thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. We've talked a couple times off the air, but it's nice to have you share part of the program with me. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about here recently, and maybe you can help us explain it a little bit more, is this fiduciary rule that came out of the Department of Labor that sort of clarifies how an investment analyst or financial planner is to recommend things to customers like me.
Sure. So up to this point, there were basically two types of people that you could work with in the industry. You could work with a broker, and they operate on something called a suitability standard. So that means they only have to determine what they believe is suitable or appropriate for you at the point of sale. Past that, so if you change your mind, if the investment, you know, blows up, if you need money, you're basically somebody else's problem. The other type of person that you could work with is somebody called a fiduciary. And a fiduciary at all times is legally obligated to put you and your best interests first. So what this conflict of interest rule has done is say that after January 1st, 2018, not only is it wrong if you don't put your client's best interest first, but it will be illegal if you are not thinking of them and their best interest before yours.
So in the other category, a guy might say, well, you can do A, B, or C, but the planner might get a better payoff for B, so he would tend us toward B, even though A or C might have been better for us as the investor.
That would be, yeah. So if you're working with a broker, theoretically you could use anything out there, right? But then if you're working with a broker, they're going to be compensated by commissions. They may be pushing proprietary product that would compensate themselves or their company maybe better than they're disclosing to you. As opposed to working with a certified financial planner professional or a registered investment advisor where they are legally obligated. Everything that they're talking to you about, everything that they're putting into your plan, that has to be in your best interest first at all times.
Does that come to all sorts of investing, or does it start with just like 401k?
Great question. This is actually one of the problems that I have with the conflict of interest rule. The conflict of interest rule actually will only cover retirement accounts, so things like your 401ks or your IRAs. So think about this. Imagine going to your doctor, and you know, she says, look, anything from the waist up, I'm going to do in your best
right.
interest. Anything from the waist down, hey, I've got some things that the drug companies might want me to talk about with you. That's basically what the situation could be. If you continue to work with a broker, they'll be legally obligated to say one thing with one type of account, but on the other, it may still be the wild west.
Right. So the below your waist, I'm not going to hurt you, but I'm going to do things that might help me as well.
Exactly. And they may not always be as forthcoming or let you know exactly who is compensated in what order, or if it's a proprietary product from the company and they get a certain amount of compensation from that. There's a lot of disclosure that doesn't go into those things simply because they're just trying to push product and then go on to the next client.
The mutual fund store, I would imagine, is a fiduciary advisor.
We are. We've been so for years and years. All of our local advisors, they're all over the city. Anytime that we're meeting with somebody, anything that we're talking about, anything that we're putting into a retirement plan for somebody, A, there's a process. B, we have a reason to do it. And C, we are always putting our client's best interest first. So we can go back to it. Yeah, we're legally obligated, but we just think it's the right thing to do, right? I can't imagine going to somebody and thinking, well, gosh, they may be selling me something, but they may also be getting compensated much more richly than they're ever letting on.
So is it easy to find out if your representative is fiduciary or not?
It is. You can do three things. You can ask them just point blank, are you a fiduciary? Number two, you can ask if they have a process. And number three, you can ask how they are paid. You know, what you want to hear is that they operate on a fee basis. So they'll charge a very small percentage of the amount that they manage for you over time. You don't want to hear that there's going to be a lot of commissions or a lot of trading in the account. But, you know, just ask them point blank. They may not like it. It may be kind of an uncomfortable conversation, but it's going to tell you a lot about the person that you're working with when you start having that conversation.
That's Andy Smith, the Executive Vice President of Investments for the Mutual Fund Store. Andy, great to talk to you today. I appreciate it very much. Thanks.
Oh, great. Thank you.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.